Hey, everybody, this is Sarah Benincasa. Welcome to another edition of, well, this isn't normal because it's still not normal. If the theme of this podcast is weirdness, well, I would say we are right on trend, aren't we? Today, you're going to chat with, well, I don't know if you're going to chat with her, although you should if you get the opportunity. Oh, she's wonderful. Today, I'm going to chat with Meredith Goldstein. She is a writer for the Boston Globe. She is a podcast host for the Netflix podcast Because I Watched, which you can also listen to. Also a production of Spoke Media, which is doing this very podcast. Thank you so much to Jenna and Caroline at Spoke Media, as well as to Keith and Aaliyah and everybody else who's there. You all frickin' rock. And Meredith Goldstein is a true delight. So before we get to her, thank you to the Patreon subscribers, patreon.com/Sarah Benincasa. Thank you to everybody who's following us on Instagram, instagram.com/, you know, it's always funny to me to say that, but like, yeah, some people do access Instagram on a laptop. Who knew? Or a desktop. It is instagram.com/, well, this isn't normal. I'm also at Sarah J. Benincasa on Twitter and on Instagram. Also, you can go to matryoshka.com/Sarah, and you can, or just go to matryoshka.com and enter offer code SARA at checkout. That will get you a 20% off discount plus free shipping on everything from matryoshka.com. They are having a big sale right now, this weekend. I don't even remember what day it is. I'm recording on Thursday. This should go up on Friday. So I believe it is through March 23rd, 2020. They are doing a sale already. So you're getting a huge, huge discount there. So go there, use my offer code SARA to buy yourself something nice at a deep discount. It's matryoshka.com. Big news on this end is that I'm going to foster a cat. Her name is Polly, because she's a polydactyl. She has 6 toes. I'm extremely stoked. I'm going to be fostering her through Lux Paws, which is at LuxePaws. You can support them online. They certainly need donations of money so that they can continue taking care of various animals. But they do trap, neuter, release in an attempt to cut down on the stray cat population here in Los Angeles. And they have about 60 animals right now being fostered around the city. And they don't have a shelter. So it's all like, you know, placing people with, not people, cats with foster parents. And I'm really excited. She's six years old. And my understanding is that her original owner had to go into assisted living, which is sad to give up an animal when you do that. If I had all the money in the world, I would do a lot of things with it. But one thing would be I would create low to medium income, high quality assisted living housing, and I would make sure that it was dog, cat, and otherwise animal friendly. Seriously, this is a thing I've thought about, which is why it was very important to me when they first said, oh yeah, we have this really cute kitten. She's like 7 to 14 months old. I was like, cool, cool, cool. And then they got back in touch with me and were like, oh, actually, we have somebody whose owner went into assisted living. And I was like, that's perfect. Like that's actually right in my strike zone. That's what I want. So I'm excited. So check out at LuxePaws on Instagram. And of course, please contribute financially or otherwise to a rescue organization, animal rescue organization near you. All right. Let's get into talking to Meredith. We're going to talk about romance novels, by the way. Hey, listen, stress relief. You know what I'm saying? Well, everybody in the vast indoors, various parts of the country and perhaps world,
Well, this isn't normal listening population. Please welcome Meredith Goldstein of the Boston Globe and other places. Hello.
Thank you for having me. I've been looking forward to this all day, every minute, which seems like an hour.
Thank you so much. I've been looking forward to it too. And you have been so flexible with moving things around because of my day job and other things things that have come up. And it's so funny because right now when I'm rescheduling with somebody, it's not like I'm like, oh, I'm stuck in traffic, which is the classic LA excuse, which is usually true, by the way. I just have to be like, I fucked up. I got confused, or I have a work thing that I forgot about, or a call just came up. But it's, you know, do you feel like we have any good excuses for missing deadlines right now, like as writers?
Even just returning texts, I realized one of my friend's moms texted me last night, like, how are you doing? Is everything okay? And I texted her back, 24 hours later saying, I have no idea why I didn't text you back immediately. It's like I couldn't form an answer for her last night, but it's not like I can say I've been super busy. I mean, I have in some ways, but there's all this weird time that I wouldn't have had before. So it's odd. But the flip side of that is I don't have to like lie to get out of plans because I really just want to stay home.
So, oh, yeah. I love staying home. I mean, I don't love this because it's enforced. And so, yes. Well, it's semi-enforced. I think, quite frankly, it could be more enforced. But many people are voluntarily staying home as they should and going out only for absolute essential reasons, availing themselves of delivery services and being quite careful with their delivery person and all of those things. I think most people I know are doing that. And then a few people are being selfish and willfully ignorant and not doing that, which is interesting. The power of shaming is certainly something that we have seen applied in various ways. And I don't mean shaming somebody for like having, specific consensual adult sexual desires or shaming somebody for not wanting to be a lawyer. I want to be a chef, mom. Like things like that. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the emotional power of shaming sort of deployed as, I don't know, would it be a punitive measure or a corrective measure? I don't know. But that, I mean, you're in New England. What's it like up there? I just always think about Puritans. How's it going? Are you churning butter?
Well,
are people throwing shade at people who go out? Like, what's happening?
They are. And, you know, it's funny, writing love letters, the advice column I write for the Globe, I started to get virus-related letters over the weekend and actually a few days before. I mean, people in long-distance relationships are having some issues. Single people are having others. But the letter I ran Monday was from a woman, basically, whose boyfriend was coming home from another country and he needed to be quarantined for 2 weeks. And her letter was like, listen, I miss him. He's been away for weeks. I want to see him and physically touch him and probably have sex with him. And she said, I know it's stupid, but what if I just see him and then we only see each other? But then she sort of backpedaled and was like, well, I have roommates. And, you know, she basically wanted my permission to say, go see him. I know you miss him. You're allowed. And of course, I could not tell her that. Like, I was like, wait another few weeks. Like, and of course, this was even days before we knew how long this was going to be. But when you talk about like that shaming, that public shaming, the commenters on the column, they were furious with her. I mean, they were like, you know, stay home, you entitled millennial. I don't even know that she gave her age, but, you know, Boston.
All the people I know who are, like, the people who I personally know who are going out, by the way, are baby boomers.
Well, like, that's
I don't know any of the kids who are going out. Like, I am in the Oregon Trail generation. I was born in 1980, so that's right in between. They're called Xennials, or like this micro generation that's right in between Gen X and Millennials. I say like young Gen X, old Millennial, but I don't know anyone my age or younger, and I know a lot of them, who are not being respectful of this stuff. I do know people who are, you know, in Gen X who are like, oh, I'll still have 10 people over. Like, what is wrong with you?
See,
and also baby boomers who are like, let me go out when they don't have to. That's the thing. Because some of it is a isolation, quarantining is a privilege. So I'm not talking about people who have to. I'm talking about people who don't have to. So, yeah.
It is interesting. I'm Gen X. I was born in 77. So I guess I'm on the younger end of Gen X too. But It's fascinating to me. I think there was like a viral tweet earlier in the week, although all the days are blended together now, about how Gen X has been preparing for this forever and how we're the generation that basically we're latchkey kids and we're raised by televisions and our parents didn't really play with us. They said, entertain yourselves. And we've been ready to be alone and not complain for a really long time. And I have found that the Gen Xers I know are doing pretty well. My sister's 4 years older and she's also like very immune deficient and chronically ill. And she's like, I will happily sit in my New York apartment and watch TV and no one will bother me. Yeah, you're right. It's people who are older. Some people who are much younger. Like, I don't know if it would be like Gen Z, like post-millennial. I've seen people out.
For sure. I mean, yeah. and the sort of like Gen Z thing, like part of that, I think that age groups, if we're talking about people who are in what is biologically sort of generally acknowledged as the rough parameters of adolescence, which would be ages 10 to 25.
Yeah.
Like people where your brain is truly like your brain is less adept at assessing risk and more inclined to take risks and things like that. And you just simply don't have enough time on this planet to like fully understand all of the weight of your actions. And also, and you know, it's not totally an excuse. It's a little bit of an excuse, though. Developmentally, some of them are just not ready to accept it, or they just can't. Like, I sort of get that more.
Yeah, you're right. I'm certainly more forgiving of it. And I think it's, you know, it is so fascinating. My sister's having a tough time even getting fresh air in New York because it's really hard to be 6 feet away from each other on a busy street. But I live in Jamaica Plain in Boston, where it's pretty leafy. There are a lot of trees. And if somebody sees me on the street, they cross the street. So people here, even, you know, actually pretty much everybody I've seen has been in the last day or so really catching on pretty quickly. So hopefully that'll continue. I mean, my question, especially with the column, is here are all these people who are in relationships. They've got their own problems, right? Because they're penned up with their partners.
How scary.
I mean, I'm single and live alone and I'm like, oh, I don't really envy anybody else right now, but like people need to date and they need to fall in love. And like, you know, when I read these reports about like months and years, I'm like, well, at some point this is going to be broken. And how does it work for the compromised people who are at risk? And how does it work for, you know, I wonder how long will it be for people to date again? You know, some of this is romantic, this courtship that I'm seeing happen like on apps and what people are telling me is happening. But I think that's going to get old pretty quickly.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think it's going to, people are going to be like, no, thanks. I am so like, no, absolutely not. Yep. I don't think so. Get out of here. I mean, I've sort of been cycling through like different issues with it. And I've realized that with the size of the apartment that I have, which is under 600 square feet, mm-hmm. It's a one bed, single floor, no backyard or anything, no balcony. And I'm not complaining, by the way. I quite enjoy it. And you know, it's overpriced because it's LA, but I like it. But with this size place, I would be very unhappy if I had somebody else living with me and with me constantly. I mean, my mom told me that she made a rule that she gets 3 hours to herself at least every day, and that my dad respects that rule. But they have a much bigger establishment in which to dwell,
yeah.
And a yard that's like an acre or something out in the boonies. So that's a little bit different. But still, like, I'm very glad to not be cooped up with people. I mean, I'm glad that I didn't listen to my brother, my mom, and my dad, who were like, why don't you think about just driving cross country and riding this out with us? Like, what? No, absolutely fucking not. What a nightmare. And it's not because I don't love them. It's because I don't want to be in close quarters with people unless I absolutely have to, because I like my alone time. Also, like, listen, I hate to break news here, but I'm not having sex with any of those people. No, thank you. And they're not interested. We're not each other's types is the thing. Yeah. And like, if I were my loving sex partner and we were bonded in that way, like probably I'd be like, you know what? I'm going to get some of that good. I can deal. But otherwise, wow. I have a lot of sympathy for people who are having to deal with the close quarters thing.
Yeah. Oh. I mean, it is a lot of time. And I think when people forget how much they're out of the house and how much they work and how much they see friends. And I am also noticing this thing of like commitment. I was talking to a guy I know, and he's been seeing someone for a while. And he was like, the minute we break that bond, or like, you know, decide we're going to see each other during this, it's very serious. It's like, that could be the person you're stuck with for a while.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or like maybe in a month or two in, like, what, you know, like, he's like, if I go over there, we're in it.
I'm also wondering too, if, I mean, it is an interesting test, isn't it?
Yeah.
Maybe some people are going to look back at this and say, I knew that when I could get through fill in the blank amount of time with this person and mostly not get bored of them and mostly not hate them, that this was the one for me. I always feel that when, I mean, I'm not dating anybody right now. I'm very much single, but if I'm going to date somebody monogamously long term and invest, I need to be fascinated by what they have to say or their take on things, or I have to at least be interested in hearing it most of the time. I would say like 80% of the time, I want to know what this person has to think about a thing, because if not, who cares? Like, I need to, I might not need to agree with you. That's not it. I might just be like, huh, like if we were dating, I'd be like, huh, I wonder what Meredith's take on that would be. And I want to genuinely be curious. And that's what I've found in the long-term relationships that I've had, where I really loved the person and they loved me. Like, things may not have gone well. There were problems. And this really has nothing to do with sex life, but I suppose it has to do with emotional intimacy. I want to be curious about how they are reacting to something. I want to know what they think, not because I can't make up my own mind, just because I want to be interested in this person who probably has a very active mind and might see the world a little differently. If I'm bored of you right away, like, I don't know, man. I don't know. What do you think? What would be your ideal if you were cooped up with a love partner person? What would that look like for you?
I think it would, you know, I've been thinking a lot about this, like, who would I want to be stuck with? Because early last week, I was in New York, not knowing the extent to which all of this was going to go down. I was with my sister, and I had this moment where I thought, you know, just growing up together, my sister and I can basically sit trapped anywhere and we're used to it as siblings. But, you know, her ability to deal with her husband, like, they really get along. They like to spend hours and hours together. And how lucky is that? I mean, I think I would need someone who can also entertain himself, you know, who can do a few hours on his own. So I like sort of having a back and forth and then taking a break. And that's a real challenge, like in a small place. But I think it would be harder for me to be with somebody who needed a lot of back and forth all day long. Like, I really like my break. So somebody right now who like truly understands being off and on. And I think I'm one of those extroverted introverts, or an introverted extrovert, whatever they say. And just knowing those boundaries, and it can be hard to find someone who is on the same page with you about that. But it's also going to be somebody who loves television, because my God, I always loved television, but right now I'm cherishing it in a way that, you know, I'm so grateful. Right now, what is keeping me together, and I have not cried yet, I've heard a lot of people have cried during this, but I think, one, it's denial. Two, it's television.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, love them both. Love them both. Big fan of both.
And three is romance novels, which I always am reading and tend to read during the darkest times of my life. But they are really, really keeping me together right now. Like, I'm revisiting the classic romance novels that I love. And you get all these like happy ending stories. And like, you know, it's just so helpful to read about you know, some woman who gets everything she wants by the end of the book. So I feel like I'm going to go through a lot of romance novels in this time.
Oh, God. Okay. So first of all, did you know, you probably know this, that the rightful governor of the state of Georgia, Stacey Abrams, is a romance novelist?
I do know that. She's also a Buffy the Vampire Slayer fan. So she, the idea that someone like that can govern even greater things. I mean, I just feel like somebody who writes romance novels and likes Buffy the Vampire Slayer is probably a good leader. That's just me. That's just me.
That's my version of when people are like, oh, Juana, are you know, you hear it. It's not that people say this so much, like, of their own volition. I think it's a media narrative that got pushed. Would a president you can have a beer with, like, that's my version of a president that I, a sober, horny woman, and entering middle age, I can kick it. That's who I can kick it with is a lady who writes romance novels.
Oh my God.
Can teach me more about Buffy. Like, all right, let's do this. And totally. It's committed to justice and, you know, equal access to the vote. Great. I'm in, Stacey Abrams. Let's do this thing.
Yeah. I mean, what a gift to have someone like her around. But so I usually just read paranormal romance. Like if there's like a vampire having sex with a fairy, I've probably read it, that kind of thing. However, in the last year or so, I've gotten into like the more historic romance novels I never thought I would like because of all the layers of clothing and the confusingness of like lords and ladies. It's never been my thing. I'm not like interested in royalty that much. However, some of these Regency romances are super feminist and funny and, you know, they're very Austen-esque. And there's one I keep recommending to people this week. It's the Spindle Cove series. I think the author is Tessa Dare. And it's essentially Spindle about a seaside Cove. Community. With Spindle Cove, Cove, also known as, like as in Spinster Cove. And it is about a group of spinsters who, of course, in this time, it's like, you know, early 1800s. They're like all like 21, but they're spinsters in that time. And they live by the sea and they entertain each other and they're incredibly smart and well-educated and funny. And then one by one, they meet a man who comes to town basically and couple up. But like, it's basically this matriarchal society in this time. And so when I read those books, I was in just like such a good mood. Like, and I wanted to have my own Spindle Cove where I live with women by the sea. And
doesn't really want their own Spindle Cove. I mean, Jesus Christ.
I mean, I might have it without really knowing or trying for it. Like, I do have a lot of women friends who spend a lot of time with me. But for some reason, when I read those books, I am just absolutely serene and happy. And so I highly recommend them for people who, like, need a romance novel and, you know, want to feel better about the world. Spindle Cove. I think it's Tessa Dare. Yeah.
I love this. I once upon a time, I worked for a website called bookish.com that was going to end Amazon, which totally worked. And this was like 8 years ago, I guess. And I wrote a piece for that website about Amish romance novels. And let me just what a pure joy, pure unadulterated joy. Like I didn't get through. I was just like sort of skimming. And I could have gotten through them. I just was like, had to have a working knowledge of a few of them to be able to write about them. What a pure joy. I mean, listen, so would you say that a major recommendation from you to the people, would we call it, is the reading of the romance novels, besides, of course, your column in the Boston Globe.
Of course.
Obviously, required reading, all of it. But would we call it art therapy, entertainment therapy,
I think it's, you know, it's a really good question, what we would call it. I guess entertainment therapy. You know, there's a podcast I like, Hot and Bothered, which is they really dive deep into romance novels and try to get people to write them. But they do a really good job of explaining, like, I think you forget how often, like, women aren't the focus of books often, or when they are, they don't get happy endings. And like, I think it really changed the makeup of my brain when I started reading a ton of romance novels, because I was like, oh, there's so much. There are so many horrible things that I forget that a lot of things aren't horrible, and sometimes amazing things happen. So like, once I started to read them, I began to have like different expectations of the world in this sort of like surprising way. So I think it is some kind of therapy where you're like, oh, I'm reading about generally a woman. There are certainly romance novels about all kinds of people, but generally a woman, and she gets to get what she wants without some horrible tragedy. And yeah, wow, what kind of therapy is that?
She doesn't have to earn her joy through trauma.
Through trauma, right. And like, and you know, it's sort of like such a role reversal of if anybody's, you know, I read, you know, sort of these straight romances and they're all, again, they're all kinds, but like, they also do a good job of writing the men. I always tell my straight man friends, like, if you want to know how to like court someone or like respectfully be interested in someone, my gosh, read these, because there's so many ideas and romance novels do so well with talking about consent in a way that isn't gross. And I don't know. It's just a real, I think it's a really good way to say, okay, everything's going to be okay. And that things are allowed to be fun. And you're right that it's not about winning because you've been through horror.
And there's also, there's a quality of it. I love what you're talking about, because this is such, I've never heard that insight before. And it makes so much sense to me now. And I think that one reason why things that are intended for women, like chick lit, are often not demonized. They're just mocked and condescended to because they're not serious. Because it's not like a white man in Brooklyn writing about how his bar mitzvah didn't work out and now he's a tenured professor at a small literary society in some fucking university, and he's fucking his assistant. And like, it's not like 500 fucking pages about that, so it's not real literature. It's just like a lady coming.
Right. Having a good time.
It's a lady coming, and maybe she's wearing a fun outfit, so therefore it does not qualify.
And she's like having a journey. And you know, I think a lot about mystery novels and how, you know, they don't get mocked, even though there's an absolute formula. Like, there's no mystery novel where, like, oh, whoops, they didn't solve it. Sorry. Like, the, you know, it's like often some dude who solves a crime. And so with romance, you're like, yeah, there is a formula. There's a happily ever after. But like how they get there is it's actually a really hard thing, I imagine. I don't think I could ever write romance because everybody knows how the book is going to end. It's going to work out. So you have to really keep a reader going to get there. Like, I have a lot of respect for like how to figure that out without it being boring, because we all know, like, there will be kissing.
Yeah, and they also like with Harlequin and stuff, they have a very specific formula for what needs to happen in terms of rules and regulations and when they have to first see each other and when they have to first kiss and what, like, it's all so formulaic. And within the formula, some of these authors have a great time, and most of them aren't paid very much, and that's why they're churning out so many different books a year, often under different pseudonyms. They're really not always well compensated. You have, of course, the bestsellers who are, you know, they're going to be paid well, of course, because they earn money for the company and et cetera, et cetera. But typically, when we're looking at a romance novelist, they're not bringing in the big bucks. That's part of why they're doing it so much. And you know, one of my books is called Real Artists Have Day Jobs, and that's definitely true for a lot of them.
Absolutely.
Or they are work-from-home moms or work-from-home wives and moms or what have you. So there's supplementary income there. So it's a really, you know, it's very interesting. And then, of course, you do get the people who hit big and are making great money, and they're able to make, or if they're not wealthy, they're able to get by. They're able to get by at a working class or middle class income, even if they're not, you know, the Danielle Steeles of the world, of whom there are so few. But, well, you know, Meredith Goldstein, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me, for being so flexible and so patient. Where can the humans listening to this podcast, you're welcome. Where can the humans listening to this podcast find out more about you and your work?
Well, I would definitely recommend the Love Letters podcast as a binge. It's a lot of people talking about their breakups in season one and how they met people in season two. So it's kind of like sitting around and getting juicy gossip just in a podcast. So that's just Love Letters. And then the column can be found at boston.com/loveletters. But I'm actually, just for my own, like, to soothe myself, there's an episode of the Love Letters podcast that has Esther Perel on it. And I just feel like I want to hear her voice right now every day. So we were lucky to have her for an episode and some great people. So I would just go straight to the podcast on Love Letters.
Oh, that is so wonderful. Esther Perel has such a wonderful, just love, soothing, compassionate. Like, she's just got a great, and her accent is fantastic. Whew, she's
yes, just talk to me all day. You know,
I
she's
know.
The best. So that's where. But yes.
Well, Meredith, thank you so much. And everybody, read Love Letters, follow Meredith on the internets, and read romance novels.
Thank you. Thank you.
And there you have it. Please check out Meredith Goldstein and all her various online incarnations. She is really, really wonderful and funny and smart. And we were going to hang out soon. I was going to go visit her in Boston. That's actually true of another one of our guests coming up, and maybe another one of our guests too. I basically am arranging discussions with people who are awesome and interesting and who I'm sad that I can't hang out with in person. So she's great. Great insight, very talented writer, and I'm so glad that she joined us. And listen, great relaxation. I'm just saying, romance novels, erotica, shall we say. There are things you can do on your own to help you relax, and I highly advocate it. Just, don't overdo it. We don't want you to wear yourself out, so to speak. All right, well, really getting into it. I'm at Sarah J. Benincasa on Twitter and on Instagram. Check out our my brand affiliate friends at Matryoshka Style on Twitter and especially on Instagram. Oh, gosh. I mean, heck, everybody. Thank you, patreon.com/Sarah Benincasa subscribers. All right. You're great. Support your local animal rescue. Support your local... whatevs. Okay, bye.